What is landlocked property? I think the best way to describe it would be a property that does not have any legal access to a public roadway. It's kind of like an island in between other properties, and the access is completely cut off. Yes, the property is there, but in reality, how are you going to get to it? Building on the property might be very difficult, not even allowed in most cases, because if you can't establish any sort of access for emergency vehicles or anything like that, they're simply not going to let you build on the property. And actually getting to the property in some areas is a real gray area. You're just going to trespass on someone else's land in order to get to your property.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah, okay, so finally.
Well, finally, we're getting closer.
We're getting closer, yeah. We're still missing a few more things, but yes, we're almost there.
This is our podcast set. That's for people that are listening to the podcast. Mm-hmm. You should be checking it out on video. I mean, you know, I guess you can do what you want, but you're missing the experience, I guess, if you're just listening to it.
Yeah,
them, right,
don't
Heather?
Tell people what to do.
Yeah, okay, I won't tell you. You can
we
do whatever you want.
We invite you to check it out on YouTube. Okay. It does enhance the experience, I think, if you will.
Right.
So yeah, so we're a lot closer. I feel this is more where we wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got some wall stuff that we've got being put in. Mm-hmm. We've got another piece of furniture and some other decorations and stuff like that. But we got some new chairs, new table. So it's new lighting.
Plants, yeah. So yeah.
We're getting there, yeah.
It's weird though, because every time you think you're done, you're like, no, I want to do this. And we had a hot problem trying to define the actual look. But we figured it's a real estate podcast.
Right.
It should look like, you know, a house like a or a comfortable, yeah. You know. So we're getting there. I'm really excited. So what are we talking about today though?
Well, today is an exciting topic. And I know I say that every single time. Yes. But today we're talking about landlocked properties. And landlocked properties, that's one of the subjects that we get so many questions mm-hmm. about. That's because as a land investor, you actually run into this quite a bit.
They look like screaming deals.
They do.
And so you're like, oh my gosh, this is, if you just compare, you know, it to a different property that actually has access, you're like, This is amazing. I have to buy this.
Yeah. Before I got into this business, mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was such a big thing. You know, I had heard stories about properties being landlocked, meaning they don't have access. And, you know, so I've heard about that in the past, but I didn't realize it was as big of an issue as it actually is in some areas. Now, some areas it's not very common,
right.
But other areas it's very common.
Well, because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Because you're thinking, well, that's going to be a very rare thing. Like, how would they even approve a sale? How would anything happen like that if you don't have access, right?
Right.
So you're thinking it's not going to be that common.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I guess the first place to start would be, what is landlocked property?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the best way to describe it would be a property that does not have any legal access to a public roadway, meaning it's kind of like an island in between other properties mm-hmm. and the access is completely cut off. To a public roadway, meaning, yes, the property is there, but in reality, how are you going to get to it? So building on the property might be very difficult, meaning not even allowed in most cases, mm-hmm. building on a property, because if you can't establish any sort of access for emergency vehicles or anything like mm-hmm. that, they're simply not going to let you build on the property. And actually getting to the property in some areas is a real gray area. Like, you know, you're just going to trespass on someone else's land in order to get to your property. Some states do have laws in the books that allow you to actually physically access your property, maybe for agriculture or doing some things like that, but you can't actually build on the properties in very limited uses. So, mm-hmm. but those are state by state rules.
Right. Well, talk about how this happens. Like, how would a property even get landlocked? It defies logic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it really does. Now, I think in a lot of these cases, these are lot splits that were done many years ago mm-hmm. when they didn't have regulations in place. So people took a large parcel, carved it up into smaller parcels, and sort of divvied it up without really thinking about the access mm-hmm. issue. And, you know, there may have been established dirt roads or something like that leading to that parcel, but they weren't
legally recognized.
Yeah, they weren't. That's a great way to put it. They weren't legally recognized on the map or in the deed or anything like that. So basically, what happens is if you've got a property that there may be a dirt road to get there or something like that, but there's no actual legal access to get to the property.
Right, and you don't have the right to like pave it or anything that the city might require. You can't make it certain, you know, 20 feet wide or what have you. Yeah, I imagine like could have been like someone owned. I don't know. They sold off all these different ones, and then they thought, oh, someone will buy this one, or they split it themselves. Or, I mean, and also back in the olden days, it probably was no big deal. Like, you know, you knew your neighbor.
And they might have been family. So it might have been a large property owned by one family, all the heirs, divided up into all the heirs. Mm-hmm. They all knew each other. It was no big deal. You know, I have to go over Cousin Jimmy's land to get to mine. Cousin Jimmy doesn't care.
No, because Cousin Jimmy thinks, oh, well, this is like a legal access for everybody.
Right.
Like Cousin Jimmy knows that, oh, yes, although that's technically on my land, or if he even knows, that's how we all get onto the properties.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, that it could have just been a kind of a family compound thing. And then that kind of diminishes. Everyone from that generation is gone. And then they actually look at it and like,
someone sold off that property along the roadway. And, you know, then, you know, there's no, and then the access basically disappears. At least the legal access disappears.
Right, so. Right. And, you know, and I think a lot of people think, oh, but if we're using it, there's that, what is it called, where it's just common.
Like a prescriptive easement.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And yes and no.
Yeah. So each state has different rules with that stuff. You know, if it's always been that way, there's legal procedures in some states to actually get that legally defined. But then you're probably talking about lawyers and surveyors and legal fees and a whole process to get that done. So it's not just as simple as saying, oh, it has legal access. You have to jump through a bunch of hoops. And there could be obstacles that stand in your way that make it not actually possible in the end.
Right, because it's the difference between just being able to and actually doing it.
Right.
Like, you need that legal aspect. So, okay, so have we ever bought any landlocked properties?
Yeah, so I want to tell a little story about the one landlocked property that we have purchased in the past and how it went. So, basically, this was a larger property. I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 acres. And this was in a kind of a... actually sit within a city limits of a city in the South. So a larger city. And I got this, you know, we sent out an offer to this property. And at the time I sent it out, I didn't know it was a landlocked property or anything like that. And the seller responded and they were interested in selling at the price I had offered. And then I looked at the property. I was like, oh no, this is landlocked. There's actually no roadway to get to the property. It was developed all around it. And this is kind of like the remainder that was left in that area. So I don't know if the developer originally owned this or what, but there was hundreds of homes kind of around this property.
That seller was like, yes,
I know.
Yes, thank
you. And actually I did buy it from a developer. So it might've been their property. I don't know. So anyhow, the price was too high. I realized like, this is landlocked. I can't pay for that much for it. So I thought to myself, I was at the mindset at the time that like I'll buy any property if it's cheap enough. You know, I figured it just made sense. Like if I could get it cheap enough, then I will buy it and then I will resell it and someone will want to buy it. So I went back to them and I said, you know, this is landlocked, what am I going to do with this and everything? So I just said $2,000, and I figured it would, you know, they would just blow me off and not do it. But then they respond and they said, okay, we'll do it. And then my next thought was, how am I going to talk to Heather? How am I going to pitch this to Heather so she doesn't get mad at me for buying a landlocked property? And I just didn't tell her about it. And that was my system for
it.
Did
you really?
No.
Oh, I was like, I told you did.
I told you that.
Tricking me. I'm like, okay, this is a different property.
We ended up buying it. I think it was $3,300 with closing costs and everything like that. So that's one thing I should point out. A lot of these properties, it's not just like the cost that you're paying for the property, but you've got closing costs and back taxes and all kinds of random stuff you have to pay in order to close, title insurance and everything to close this property. So about $3,300.
Was title okay insuring a property that didn't have access?
Yeah, they just have an exception on there. It just says, you know, we're not insuring legal access to this property.
Okay.
Yeah. So I knew what I was buying and everything like that. I just thought to me that there was so much value there that I could easily resell it to someone that...
What were like the, do you remember what like comps for a comparable?
It was in the city kind of. So, you know, like kind of the suburban area of the city, but there was just no large parcels like that available. I mean, there's a non-developable piece like this, not something that you could cut up into smaller. It just kind of like remainder from a subdivision. But I just figured what I thought was like, hey, there's so many neighbors that their property backs up to this. That one of these neighbors is going to want to have just like the most amazing backyard ever. You know, like 13 acres.
Yes.
And these are quarter acre lots, you know, all these homes are built on. Hey, everyone. Just a quick reminder that you can join our community for free at landconquest.com. Inside, you'll get all the resources, training, and support for building a thriving land flipping business. Once again, that's landconquest.com. All right. Enjoy the rest of the show. So, and
can you imagine that? No, I mean, honestly, think about that. Like, right. Your house is on a quarter acre. I mean, everyone's is. So it's like very track home specific, you know what I mean? Like, right. Tiny little backyard, except for yours that has 13 freaking acres.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I can't even wrap my mind around that.
I mean, as a homeowner there, mm-hmm. It would make complete sense to do an amazing value add for their property. Like, what would their property be worth mm-hmm. in that area compared to others?
I don't even know. And what you could do with
what
that.
What you could do with it, yeah.
I mean.
You'd have your own, you know, walking trails and everything. Because 13 acres, I mean, that's a big property. It
right.
It really is a big property.
Yeah. I can't. And coming from just 14, like, that's just crazy to me. Right. But okay.
I put it on the market, I think, for $19,900. And I didn't even mm-hmm. list it with the real estate agent. This is like one of my first few deals. Mm-hmm. And I just listed it on Facebook Marketplace. And I think I put it in the flat fee MLS. I'm not sure. No, I actually, come to think of it, I just put it in Facebook Marketplace and tried to market it that way. And I've got tons and tons of responses, all kinds of inquiries, people. And I put it in the description. Hey, this is landlocked, you know. Mm-hmm. Potential uses include disc golf, hiking, I don't know, all kinds of stuff I made right. up. And, you know, I got tons and tons of things. And people would always ask me, like, what does a landlock mean? What? And I'm like, well, there's no legal access. Oh, I'm not going to buy it then.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So I had so many of those conversations.
Oh, can you imagine those at 13 acres where a house is normally on a quarter acre?
Yeah.
And people in that zip code are probably going, what the? I mean, yeah, I want 13 acres for less than $20,000.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I got tons of that. It was kind of a waste of time. No one would buy it. I sent out a neighbor letter, meaning I did a letter to all the neighbors mm-hmm. that you know, had properties that butted up right against that property and offered it to them. And it was taking a while and so many inquiries and just such a pain in the butt. And I wasn't going to make much money. And eventually one of the neighbors did step up and want to buy the property, but I had to reduce it. I had to sell it for $6,000. So in reality, I still made money on the mm-hmm. deal. So,
was it worth it? Everything
no.
you put into it?
No, it wasn't worth it. It was a major pain. I sold it for $6,000, which means after closing costs and everything like that, I think my whole profit was $2,300. Mm-hmm. So I didn't double my money or anything, but I only made $2,300 and it was a lot of effort. You know?
Right. And it took time away from actually making
doing much better
$20,000 deals. Yeah, profit.
Yeah. And my average for that year, you know, mm-hmm. like all of my different properties that I sold that year, my first year was like $21,000. Mm-hmm. So it was like 1/10 of the profit mm-hmm. from the other deals. So.
Probably double the effort, if not triple or quadruple the effort.
Yeah. It's exactly what happened. So after that, I put a new policy in place that I am not buying any landlocked properties. And we get leads for them all the time. Like mm-hmm. we send out a lot of offers and everything. And we get a lot of them coming back where they're actual landlocked properties. And it's just kind of our thing that we don't buy them anymore.
Is there any circumstance that would make you buy it?
No.
No.
It's just not at the moment. Not at the moment.
Yeah. And we've talked about it before. Like, if we had a specialized team,
yep.
it would be kind of fun because, like, they are diamonds in the rough.
Yep.
But I think that you go into that and you're like, it's kind of like how people do, like, the venture capitalist thing. Or like, okay, we're going to buy or invest in all of these, whatever. And we know that only 2% are actually going to really pay off. The rest of them, we're lucky if we don't lose money, but we probably will lose money.
Yeah.
So if you had just a separate department that you were kind of like, here's the throw caution to the wind money and...
Yeah, and I got to get into this a little bit later, how you could create a business model around this, because I do think that there is money to be made on these type of properties. But I think you have to be pretty specific, and I think that it is something that you kind of have to specialize in order to do it right, in my opinion. It just takes a lot of resources, it takes a lot of thought and a lot of like problem solving for each property. Mm-hmm. And not every property is... Each property is completely different, you know, the challenges that you're going to face there. Mm-hmm. So I think there are ways to do it to make a lot of money with it, but I think that you have to really dedicate some effort in order to do that. And we're so busy doing all of our other properties and everything that's kind of not on our radar at the moment. Mm-hmm. It is more common in some areas than mm-hmm. others. I've noticed that it's more common in the South for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe there's the rules on lot splitting and everything like that were more lax. Mm-hmm. It's also pretty common in sort of desert square type areas. These are mm-hmm. like Arizona, Places like that where someone does like a huge subdivision on paper where they just, you know, take one huge, huge parcel and cut it up into a bunch of tiny little parcels. But it's just showing on the map. You go out to the area, there are no roads there. There are nothing to, you know, so.
Yeah, because, you know, if you buy a big, big piece of property and you're going to split it nowadays, you would, to get it approved, you'd have to show where the roads would be. Like all those kinds of things where maybe before you didn't have to, you just could do that. And then it was like, well, duh, we're going to put roads in there. Okay, great. Yeah, you put roads in there. Like maybe it was like understood that roads would be in there and they weren't as specific. Yeah. And maybe just that it's, you know.
I think many of these areas just had absolutely, they just let people do whatever they wanted.
Like
they
the Wild West.
Well, they had no oversight at all. Mm-hmm. Like people could do whatever they wanted with their
you
land.
Split it, and stamped
sell
approved.
Off whatever part they wanted, you know. So I think that was kind of the norm before, but then, you know, obviously people realized there was problems with that sort of unrestricted way of doing things. But now if you're going to, in most all areas, if you're going to split something up, they're going to require you to have some frontage on a public road or dedicated easement access in order to get to that property. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to let you do it these days without that. So yeah, in the South and in the desert Southwest, it's kind of more common. So how can you make money with landlocked properties? So this is, you know, one of these things that we've thought about. You know, we were talking about, like, there's ways to make money with this. First of all, number one, you have to buy it cheap. The rule of thumb, you know, I don't have a specific rule of thumb because I'm not an expert in landlocked properties, but I know some other investors kind of specialize in this. I can tell you it's not 50% of market value, which is what we try to buy at. We try to buy it one half of what we think we can resell it for. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 10 or 20% of market value. So, and a disclaimer here, I am not an expert in landlocked properties, but if I was going to go into this area, that's the kind of the numbers that I would be shooting for. Now, the good thing is that when you're talking to sellers, they know generally that it's a landlocked property.
Right.
And they've tried to sell it before. They can't, you know, selling a landlocked property through a real estate agent or something like that, most real estate agents aren't going to take a listing like that. So they know that they've got something that has limited value anyhow. So they may be more apt to selling it at those type of numbers than someone with a more marketable type of property.
I'll stop you really quick. What shocks me is that because you bought it and you were like, well, I'll sell it to a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And you always think, well, why don't they reach out to their neighbors? But people don't know their neighbors like they used to.
They don't know how to pull list names and addresses of their neighbors.
No.
They don't. They may not even be in the area.
Right.
You know, like what? They're going to just go through Yellow Pages and try to call everyone. It's like so much effort. And there's not many people that are going
to
go through that.
No. And they don't and might not want to because they already know it doesn't have value. So to them, it's already like, this doesn't hold much value. So what's, like, I'm not going to create value because there is no value in their mind.
Right, exactly.
So it's just a lot of the logic that we say, well, why don't they do this? Well, why don't they do that? Well, they won't and they don't want to.
And a lot of people, you know, say they did get an agreement with the neighbor, like, hey, I'll sell you this property for $10,000. Mm-hmm. They have no idea what the next steps are even.
Right.
Like, how are you going to put a contract together? What are we going to do to close this transaction? Like,
who does just, that? Where do I go?
Exactly.
And what, do I just go down to the city, the county? The county would be like, well, do you have something drawn up? Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then they're like, it's not worth it.
Right.
Whatever.
So ways to make money with landlocked properties. First of all, that the one exit plan is selling to a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So a neighbor, obviously, they already have access to their property, and they can simply annex this property onto theirs, making theirs bigger, and then the access isn't an issue because they've just made their property bigger and more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of times that's a very viable thing because they can probably pick up this property for a pretty good price, and it's a sort of win-win situation. Now, the problem is, depending on the layout and everything, there may be, you know, 100 neighbors, there may be two or three viable neighbor options, something like that, or one even. And you just have a limited pool of buyers in that situation.
And they hold the power too, because if they're like, yeah, sure, but you know, they might not agree to your price.
Yeah, and they may not have the money to do it. They may not have the desire to increase the value, to increase the size of their property. You're just a limited buyer pool and limited options there. It really makes sense in a lot of situations, and a lot of times you can sell to a neighbor, but it's definitely not certain.
Right.
shouldn't be your only potential exit plan.
Right. And I thought it was going to be almost guaranteed.
Right.
Because I thought, to me, it was like a no-brainer. I would absolutely, in any of our, you know, houses we've lived at, if that opportunity came up, I would find a way to get the money.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, what does that even mean, find a way? Sometimes you just don't have the money, you know, even though you want to.
So another thing that you can do is fix the access issue and then resell. Are you looking to scale your land flipping business quickly? Well, we're happy to present our new cutting-edge system built specifically for land flippers. Take a look at the Land Conquest business system today, and you'll gain full access to a customizable pre-made website, CRM, dedicated phone numbers, text automations, 24/7 support, and more. It's basically a business in the box. Go to software.landconquest.com to learn more. So what do I mean by fix the access issue? This is a situation where you would be generally negotiating with a neighbor that does have access to a public roadway. You'd be negotiating an easement to get to your property. Now, depending on the layout, you may have to deal with one neighbor. You may be having to deal with five neighbors where you kind of cut through five different properties to get to the public roadway. And depending on the layout, that may be something where it's a potential viable deal or not. So if it's one neighbor and you've got many different options and neighbors to contact to see if you could work something out, then you've got a higher likelihood of actually putting this deal together. If you've got only one viable path and you've got to get five different neighbors to sign off on it, your likelihood of arranging something like this is probably very, very low. So you'd have to evaluate these properties on a case-by-case basis to try to determine if it's worth your time and effort to try to make this happen. If it's a higher value property, you know, and you've got only one neighbor to deal with and you've got many different options for access, then maybe that's worth your time. If it's a Desert Square property that's worth $5,000, if you are able to get access and you've got to deal with five different neighbors to make that easement access happen, I wouldn't waste my time.
Right. You got it. I mean, time is more valuable. And like if you could be making more money on a different property, that makes a lot more sense.
Yep. The other thing you can do is just resell as a landlocked property and make it someone else's problem. So that's viable if you just get it for such an ultra cheap price and then you're able to resell it for a really cheap price. And someone may look at it and say, oh, I don't care if it's landlocked or I'm going to, you know.
I'm an expert in this. It sounds like a fun challenge or something.
Exactly.
I mean, I like your last one, though.
Okay, my last one. This is my favorite one. Hold until personal drones are a thing so you don't even need a driveway. So who cares about a roadway access if you don't need roads?
Oh, my Lord. What I'm dealing with.
Yeah, well, so like in, what is it? In Back to the Future, he said, where I'm going, we don't need roads or something like that.
Right.
Yes. Dr. Brown said that.
You've still been holding on to that hope.
It's going to happen.
Okay. I mean, yeah, you could just buy them as speculative and then put them for sale in the MLS, really expensive. And eventually maybe a neighbor would see it. Uh-huh. And you send letters and you just until someone bites.
Yeah. Part of the strategy, what I would do is that there's kind of two ways to look at this. First of all, you could just get it for such a cheap price that it doesn't matter. You'll be able to use one of those exit plans, you know, even reselling as a landlocked property and still make money. And it's just a matter of how much money you're going to make if you're able to solve the access issue, if you're able to sell to a neighbor, you know, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. The other strategy is to get the property locked up and under contract and close when you're able to either solve the access contingent upon you solving the access issue or contingent upon you selling to a neighbor or something like that. Mm-hmm. So the risk you're going to run in a situation like that is that you'll start contacting the neighbors and then they'll be like, well, I just want to buy that property directly from Jimmy. You know,
right.
Yes. So they'll try to do an end around a lot of times. So you need to make sure your contract is really ironclad, maybe some sort of recording, a memorandum or something like that, just showing that you, if you're going to put effort into this property, that you've got the contractual right to actually
purchase. You'll be surprised because what'll happen is neighbor number two will go to neighbor number one and say, I'll just pay more. Let's cut him out. Come on. You know, and the other one's like, okay, I should have sold to you for, you know.
Right. They'll play games. They'll refuse to negotiate access with you. And then they'll hope that you'll just walk away from it. And then they'll contact the person that owns it now and buy it from them directly. So right. All kinds of stuff like that would happen. So you just got to be kind of aware of those types of things.
Just get ahead of them.
Yeah, get ahead of them. That's a great way to put it. So when you're creating this access, like how do you fix the access issue? So first of all, you would contact neighbors and say, hey, like I'm buying this property here. I would like to establish legal access. Would there be a way that we could get an easement through your property to get to the road? You know, right along the property line. You'll hardly notice it's there. I'm willing to pay you this amount and see what they say. So if they agree or you're able to negotiate something that's reasonable, then simply in a lot of areas, what it requires is you getting a surveyor to confirm this and then probably an attorney to kind of write up the language in a deed or something like that. So you would have some expenses with that, but first step would be kind of getting the agreement of the neighbors. I would suggest, you know, if you're going to talk to a neighbor, you know, line it out, get a map, you know, get a satellite images image, line it out on the map where you want this access to be, send that to them, whether email or mail or something like that, and try and negotiate that way. And then after you get that agreement, you get it surveyed, you get, you know, the legal stuff done on it, then you probably want to create physical access if it's not there, like, you know, bulldozing a roadway or something like that in order to actually, so people can physically get to the property. So that's going to make it the most marketable. So what do you do if neighbors won't negotiate? And I'm sure this happens all the time. You could offer to sell it to them, or you could explore legal remedies. In some states, there are legal processes where you can go through to establish access. Now, I'm not an legal expert on landlocking properties or anything like that. But I know it's possible in some areas by going through a legal process, and you'd have to talk to an attorney in that specific area that specializes in something like that to see what you're in for, and if it's a guaranteed thing or if it's not a guaranteed or whatever the case may be. So that might be worth it for you to pay legal fees and go through that process, the time and everything like that, so you can establish a property that's then worth quite a bit more. You've added a lot of value. You solved a big problem there.
You know, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I feel like this is such a really good business idea. But it would be something where I'd be like, you need to become like, you know, we're not exactly niche in our properties that we buy. We're open to different types, right? Except for ones you won't. Like, we're more like these we won't, but pretty much everything else we will. I mean, you have some set guidelines. But anyways, I think that if you were going to open a niche business, and maybe if you had a partner or if you yourself were an attorney, this would be, would be fantastic, where you only buy landlocked properties.
It's kind of like putting a puzzle together on each property. Yeah. You know, if you're good at like solving problems, you know, looking at each thing and kind of figuring out the best way to solve that, that problem, like it might be up your alley, you know,
right?
Like, and you can create real value, especially if areas, higher dollar areas and everything, you can create real value just by solving this problem.
So. Right. Yeah. I think like, if that's your personality where you enjoy that, you're going to be talking to people, you're going to be doing tons of research. I mean, I think this would be a fantastic niche, knowing that you're going to hit some home runs and some.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So basically, you know, your two approaches to this were to get the property under contract so cheap that any of these exit plans would work, and just close on the deal and then figure out what you're going to do to exit plan on the property. And then the other thing is you could kind of get it locked up contractually and work through these issues and figure out the best exit plan for it then.
I guess, you know, and you know, we go into why we don't buy these. We don't have a team specialized in it. We're not like super experts in this, right? But my risk tolerance is not as good as other people's, or is
But
higher? Am I higher or am I lower? I have a lower risk tolerance.
Yes.
Lower. Okay.
Right. Yeah, but the thing is, this can be done in a low risk way if you do the contractual thing.
Right.
But your big risk though is time, wasting a lot of time and getting no results. So I think for us, that's one of our things that doesn't appeal to us. Yeah, we move quick. These are kind of longer term projects. And I don't know. I just don't like spending a lot of time on a particular property and then not being able to see the finish line. So,
yeah. What are some other other thoughts on this you wanted to get into?
No, that was
okay.
Fun.
I'm going to go to a segment. I was like, because I was about to cut you off and be like, it's time for
no, there's no page two.
The answer or the whatever, you know, questions from the community.
Questions from the community. Yeah, this is our next segment in the Turning Profit podcast that we do every week. First of all, I do want to mention before we get into the questions, if you are not a member of the Land Conquest community, we'd love to have you over there. To find the community, simply go to landconquest.com. It's a school community, and that's school S-K-O-O-L, and it's on that platform. But if you go to landconquest.com, you will see the link to the community. You'll also see links to our membership program. So that our membership program is a bundle of our Land Conquest software, which we use to run our business. It's a CRM, and it also runs all of our business processes, website, phone numbers, everything like that that we need to run our business. And then also an advanced community as well. And that community, we do a weekly Q&A session, our Q&A session, where you can we can hop on the Zoom meeting together, ask your questions, want me to evaluate a deal, any of that kind of stuff. And we do that. And plus, you'll get to network with a lot of cool people in the community. And then also, you get access to our Land Conquest course, which is over 10 hours of premium training. Spend a lot of time putting that all together. And that lays out our exact business plan for doing our land investing and how we've been able to do everything. It includes all kinds of the actual letter that we send out to sellers. It includes all our spreadsheets, templates, scripts, all that kind of stuff as well. Anyhow, we'd love to have you over there. There's a link on landconquest.com for our membership program.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. And then you can also post questions and we pick some.
Yes, in our Land Conquest free community, mm-hmm. we have lots of questions and things happening mm-hmm. in the community. We cherry pick four of these questions each week and then feature them on the podcast. So if you want to be featured on the podcast, please post questions. And if it looks interesting, we will grab them and then do our best to answer them.
Take it away here?
Yeah, fire away, Heather.
Okay, so I don't ever see these beforehand, so I'm always like stump Heather. Let's see here. Frank says, purchase and sale agreement. I received a signed P&S agreement in the mail on Friday. This was confirmation that the system is working. My next step is due diligence, and I am currently marketing the property for sale on the usual sites. Give me some feedback on your thoughts on the matter. Wow, this is a very broad...
Okay, so he's marketing the property for sale mm-hmm.
he
already.
He received the signed agreement
okay.
on Friday. And he's happy because the system is working. Like, he sent out mail, I assume. He got it back. He's excited. His next step is due diligence, and I'm currently marketing the property for sale on the usual site. So I guess, has he closed it?
Doesn't sound like it, which is different than our system. We actually close on the properties first, mm-hmm. then market them for sale. So I would suggest maybe that approach. Mm-hmm. But the other portion of that is the due diligence side of things. So due diligence is a whole big thing for us. When we get a property under contract that we want to move forward with, it sets off a whole process for us. We've got four stages of our due diligence process. So we've done podcast episodes about this. It's in our Land Conquest course in detail. But these four aspects of our due diligence process are, number one, we hire a photographer to go out to the property. They also do drone videos and videos on the ground, walking the property, and also a little bit of report, kind of an on-site inspection. We also open up a title order. So mm-hmm. we get a title report and we get to investigate any potential title issues or things that are recorded against the title of the property. We also get an opinion from a local land broker or agent. That's another big part of it. And then the fourth part is we do a separate due diligence report. That's an internal report that we do where we're basically calling the city, the county, the utilities. We're finding out about zoning. We have a whole checklist of things that we information that we find out about the property. So we take all of those things together, and that's our entire due diligence process.
Right. And we like to do it because in the way that we do it is so that you get the offer, you do due diligence, you close on the property, and then you market it for sale.
Exactly.
In that way. And also we get title insurance, and we have a company that handles the closings for us, like title or escrow or attorney yep. or whatever it is, because we don't want to market a property that's, you know,
yeah. I mean, you don't really have control of it. I mean, you may have it under contract and your contract may say that you have the right to, market the property or something like that. But I just think that you give up a lot of control. A lot of potential issues can come up doing things that way. Mm-hmm. So it's just not the system that we do. Do you have a great deal under contract? Well, submit it to partnerwithpete.com. The Partner with Pete program is a deal funding program where we will actually use our funds to complete the purchase of the property. We will do every other step of the process, including the due diligence, the transaction side, the marketing side, and the transaction on the resale side. And when all the dust settles, we will split the profits 50-50. There is no downside for you as an investor, only upside. So once again, go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and let's get it funded.
Okay, so Rodney is looking for a property research tool.
Okay.
What property research tool do you use and why?
Our main property research tool that we use is LandID. Mm-hmm. So when we get a property, when we get a lead in, that's the first thing we do. We look it up on LandID, which is basically a mapping program. And it shows the outlines of the property. It shows the information, the tax record information about the property. We get to see the contours in the land. We get to see if there's a flood zone, if there's wetlands. You know, obviously the access we can tell on there generally. And a lot of different pieces of information on there. But that gives us a really good snapshot of what that property is about. So that's kind of our initial due diligence tool right there. And then we do further due diligence after we get a property under contract. But that's the main software tool that we use there, LandID. Really, really good tool.
Ashley, I like your name. It's our daughter's name. Is asking, photo or not in the mailer? I took Pete's mailer offer and signed up for Rocket Mail and print. I'm not sure if I should include the family photo. I personally don't like my picture or anything, let alone a family picture. Did you see the impact of the response rate due to missing family photo?
The question is here, how do you want to market yourself as a land investor? And now I see people doing it both ways. There's the approach that you are doing the sort of personal approach where you're, you know, a personal investor and you're lending them into your personal world a little bit. And that's kind of part of your branding. The other approach is you're doing more of a, hey, just we're a professional company. We will do what we say we're going to do. We're, you know, we buy and sell properties or whatever the case may be. We're a property investor and property investment company and do sort of, I guess, more of the corporate type of branding. Now, that's what we do, the latter. Nothing's personal. Like, we don't have our family picture. I don't have my picture on there or anything like that. I don't even sign my name on the letter anymore. I started out initially doing that approach, had our family picture on our website. I signed the letters, and I transitioned pretty quickly to the sort of corporate type approach. I didn't notice any sort of difference in response rates or anything like that. The only difference I notice is less people trying to like attack me personally.
Like, F you, Pete Reese.
Yeah, Petey boy. You know, I had one letter that came back and was saying, Petey boy, you better not, you know, I don't know. It was just pretty funny. So that's my take on things. But I know a lot of other investors do that personal approach and they do really well with it.
And I'm fine with either as long as you're not saying or insinuating that you're going to be using this land for your own personal life.
Yeah, yeah.
My family and I are looking for a piece of land so that my two-year-old, you know, disabled child can have a place to
eat. Yeah, like, you don't want to lie.
That's exactly it. Yeah. You know, it's okay to, and if they ask you, like, what are you going to do? You tell them, you know? Anyways, okay, so that answers that question. I think that's kind of an old school real estate thing that agents and brokers did in a different way, whereas if someone who's selling your house, you want to have that close relationship,
right?
And it's kind of morphed, and that makes sense. Although I will say that, what, 99% of real estate agents' pictures are from like 20 years ago?
Yes, and the bigger teams, you know, it could be one person that's in charge of this team, but you'll never actually deal with that person.
Right, right.
But the agent photo thing is pretty funny.
I mean, that's been like that since I can remember, like the 90s. I was like, that
some
looks like
memes
an 80s.
Out there with that.
Yeah. Well, my favorite one is if your agent or your broker has these shoes and this pants on, you are definitely not.
Yeah, it's a photo of someone's like pants with like cuffs on it and these kind of like
loafer shoes
that says, if your real estate agent looks like this, you won't be digitally signing
anything.
Yeah,
you won't be digitally signing anything. You might not even be, I was saying, it used to be like you wouldn't even be doing a fax, but now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, man, times have changed. Jay says, emailing for leads. Anyone use email as a method of obtaining leads, replacing cold calling or direct email, or as an adjunct? Any success?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that could be experimented with. You know, I know that there are some investors that get leads by text messaging. Mm-hmm. So if text messaging works, why wouldn't cold email work?
Are you trying to trigger me?
Huh? No, I'm just saying I think it potentially could work. Now, there's canned spam laws and everything like that, so I don't know.
And Heathers who hate being text messaged.
I don't really know of any investors that are using that as their main method. You know, maybe a retargeting type thing or something would work, but I'm not saying it couldn't work. It might. I don't know.
It's something just to be giving like prints from something or other scam vibes.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If you get an unsolicited email.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm like, how did you get my email? But the reality is that if you can find the right contact, anything, I think anything can work.
Uh-huh. You know, I think it's part of a good strategy if you're looking at buying specific properties. Mm-hmm. If you're like, hey, I've been looking at this property.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, maybe find their email. Send them an email and do something real personal.
Yeah, like, hey, I found this by doing this.
Right.
And I hope you're the owner of this. And I really want to buy this because of this. I know this is off the wall and random, but I didn't know a better way to get a hold of you.
Yeah.
That's legit. That's an inquiry, you know? Well, that is it for this episode.
Yeah, well, good episode. You know, landlocked properties are always an interest to people. And
yeah, and that's like something that comes up all the time in your calls and in the community. People are always, and I think a lot of times they'll get it and they'll be like, okay, I heard you guys say, no, you don't, everything, but hear me out. But hear me out, because this one's special. And every single time we have to kind of like redirect and like, don't force a deal.
Right.
Okay, where can everyone find you online?
Yeah, basically best place to find me would be in the Land Conquest community. Simply go to landconquest.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Partner with Pete, and also TikTok. You'll see me on TikTok, although I never really go.
You do like dances or something?
Yes, what am I seeing? I do lots of dances.
And he does not do lots of dances.
So that's the best place. If you're an investor and you have a property under contract, you're looking for funding, we have a funding program called Partner with Pete. And you can find all the details at partnerwithpete.com. We're a very innovative program.
Right. Hence the screen name, Partner with
That's
Pete.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
so it's a way that investors can focus more on getting the deals. And then we take over from there, fund it, close it, do all that fun stuff for you.
I think we're getting close to paying out. Well, we're definitely over $500,000 in commissions or partner profits that we've paid out since we've started the program. But I think we're getting somewhat close to $1 million. I have to look at that.
Oh, wow. So, and it hasn't even been up that long. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, that's a good place to end, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, we'll see you guys on the next episode.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.